From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. It's Saturday, November 1st. And it's also Halloween weekend and Samhain, which is the Irish and Scottish Gaelic festival, which marks the end of the harvest season and the start of winter. And maybe that means you're brewing up a spooky pot of soup. On today's show, we chat with Aaron Hernizen of Penn State Extension on how best to preserve soups and vegetables to last you a little bit longer by freezing your food. Plus, SNAP benefits for the month of November are expected to be delayed. Radio Catskill's Annie Bennett talks with food and agricultural leaders on what this means for food access organizations and farmers in our region. All of that in Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report. First, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. On day 32 of Washington's government spending standoff, supplemental nutrition assistance program dollars are no longer available to the one out of every eight Americans who rely upon the program. Two federal judges ruled yesterday it's unlawful for the Trump administration to suspend SNAP payments starting today. President Trump says he's directed government lawyers to find a way to pay the food assistance benefits, but it's not clear when they could start to flow. As the federal government shutdown continues, some states are drawing from local funding to help feed thousands of families. Tennessee is not among them. So, as Cynthia Abrams from member station WPLN reports, some municipalities in that state are urging the private sector to pitch in.
Tennessee's state leaders have not jumped in to cover the losses. So some cities, like Nashville, are pushing food drives and directing people to local food banks. Dollar General employee Seaver Harp volunteered with his coworkers at a Nashville food bank. Harp said he relied on federal nutrition assistance growing up.
I took for granted at the time how important those benefits are. I think this is an apolitical issue to keep our neighbors fed.
700,000 Tennessee residents rely on federal food aid. For NPR News, I'm Cynthia Abrams in Nashville.
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney says he has apologized to President Trump for the airing of an ad featuring former President Ronald Reagan's criticism of tariffs. Speaking on the sidelines of the APEC summit, Carney says that he had also instructed the Ontario Premier Doug Ford not to air it during the World Series.
I did apologize to the president. The president was offended by the act, or by the ad, rather. And it's not something I would have done, which is to put in place that advertisement. And so I apologize to him.
Leaders of 21 Pacific Rim nations have concluded the APEC summit, agreeing to greater economic cooperation. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has ruled that President Trump does not have the legal authority to order changes to the National Voter Registration Form, a change that would require that voters show documents proving citizenship. NPR's Jude Joffe Block has details.
Trump signed an executive order in March that calls for sweeping changes to voting and election procedures, including changing the National Voter Registration Form to add a new requirement that would-be voters show proof of citizenship documents to register to vote. Democrats and civil rights and voting groups sued, arguing the president doesn't have that authority. The judge agreed, writing in her Friday order that the responsibility for regulating elections belongs to the states and Congress. The White House says the directive is lawful. Other parts of Trump's executive order on voting continue to be litigated. Jude Joffe Block, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Sullivan County officials have proposed a tentative budget that would raise property taxes just over 9% next year. The proposal comes as the county faces a projected $5 million drop in sales tax revenue, a shortfall officials say is tied to changing shopping habits. Dan Hoost, Sullivan County Communications Director, said,
"This budget, which is just a little over $305 million, is actually less than 1%, even less than 0.9% higher than 2025's adopted budget. We have not added extra amounts of spending in here, even though inflationary costs have risen, as everybody is aware of. You go to the grocery store and you see it. Those costs affect the county as well."
The sales tax shortfall accounts for most of the proposed tax increase.
That $5 million loss represents 6.7% of the 9.1% property tax increase. If it weren't for that loss, we could come in close to or under the property tax cap.
Hoost highlighted county efforts to control spending.
Basically telling department heads and commissioners, I'm sorry, we cannot fill a position or add a position or add a program. We aren't cutting services, but we aren't really adding anything either.
The public can weigh in at upcoming hearings on December 2nd at 5 p.m. and December 4th at 10:45 a.m. in Monticello. Legislators are expected to adopt the final 2026 budget no later than December 20th. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from the Lemelson Foundation, dedicated to improving lives through invention, innovation, and climate action. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people at wtgrantfdn.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, today we're starting today's show talking about food insecurity because this is an issue that impacts us here locally. Today is November 1st, meaning that for nearly 3 million New Yorkers, SNAP benefits for the month of November are likely to be delayed. That could have an enormous impact on our region here in the Catskills and Upper Delaware River Valley for people who receive SNAP benefits, but also for farmers markets who accept SNAP and food pantries in our listening area. Radio Catskills' Annie Bennett was down in New York City and attended a food security conference where local and state food security advocates talked about how the Trump administration's SNAP cuts will impact food pantries, agricultural nonprofits, and farm workers. Here's some of Annie's report.
First was the keynote speaker, Corby Kummer, executive director of food and society at the Aspen Institute.
New York's going to lose something like $1.4 billion in SNAP funding. 3 million New Yorkers rely on SNAP to lessen hunger and food insecurity. And, you know, the truth is plain and simple. The choices that were made in Washington are going to leave New Yorkers poorer, sicker, and hungrier.
The second panel had advocates talk about different aspects of food security, like immigration.
My name is Josh Stefani. I'm the director of the Adirondack Food System Network. We've actually had some food pantries reporting. Their numbers have cut in half because they're fearful. Many of their clients and their guests, especially their non-English speakers, are fearful to attend. It's estimated 50% of the farm worker workforce in agriculture in the North Country is undocumented workers.
Colleen Heflin, a professor of public administration and international affairs at Syracuse University, also gave a talk on how food insecurity affects elderly New Yorkers.
So while food insecurity among households with children often makes the headlines, a quieter issue is food insecurity among those 60 and older. For some older adults, these problems represent the culmination of decades of hard living. For others, they represent a decline in the economic security that accompanies middle or old age.
Radio Catskill spoke with a representative from our region about their takes on the event and an update on how food security is affecting the greater Hudson Valley.
Yeah, my name is Francis Yu. I am a co-executive director at Catskills Agrarian Alliance. I work with farmers and producers, folks who are growing our food, making amazing products in sustainable ways, in ways that are, you know, respondent and in tune with nature. And we help find them viable markets. We help find places for the food to go or people to buy the food. It takes an enormous amount of work behind the scenes of getting the food, organizing that, aggregating that, and putting it all together and packaging it. In the Catskills, I think the number one thing that impacts food access is just the rural nature of our region. So access to transportation, access to good food. You might live next to a farm that is making all of this beautiful food, but without those connections, you know, getting it is actually a different story. So we do a lot of work of trying to piece those pieces together.
Thanks to Annie for that report. You can listen to the full report on wjffradio.org. Well, as we shared, it's Halloween weekend. It's also Samhain, which is the Irish and Scottish Gaelic festival that marks the end of the harvest season and the start of winter. And maybe that means you're brewing up a spooky pot of soup. But maybe you made too much soup. Well, today we're talking all about how to properly freeze your foods, maybe allow your home garden herbs to last a little bit longer so that it stays fresh and lasts you longer through the colder months ahead. Here with me now is Andy Hernizen, food safety educator at Penn State Extension and one of the instructors of the Extension's Home Food Preservation Freezing Course. Andy, welcome to Farming Country.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, we are officially entering what I call soup season, which is when the temperature drops and all I'm kind of craving is like a bowl of soup. And you teach this course all about what to do with maybe that extra bowl of soup or maybe even what to do with ingredients before it becomes a soup. Why don't we start with just if you wanted to share more about this home food preservation course at Penn State Extension.
Yeah, first, let me just explain what Penn State Extension is. So Penn State Extension is part of the College of Agricultural Science at Penn State University. And we take the university's research, resources, and expertise out into the community. And we do that through different ways. We have some in-person workshops, some online courses, webinars. We have on our website videos and self-paced online classes and articles for people to read. We cover all areas of agriculture from the farm to the fork. So we have educators who are ready to help provide information on whatever it is you need to learn more about. So today we're talking about our freezing program. We have an online course for freezing, tell you everything you need to know. You can take that course whenever you'd like. It's self-paced, and you don't even have to complete it all at one time. You can pick away at it here and there. And like you were saying, it covers all types of freezing. So whether you're freezing some last vegetables that you're harvesting from your garden this year, if you're freezing some prepared foods like some soup or some stock, we have information on that. You can even freeze baked goods, and we have some tips and tricks on how to maintain quality when you're freezing those items as well.
Okay, and just to give folks a bit of a taste, no pun intended, of what they can expect during this course, let's talk through a little bit about kind of what this course contains. So starting with what kinds of foods are best suited to freeze exactly?
Well, I think the easier way to put it would be foods that aren't the greatest for freezing. And those are ones vegetables that have a high water content. So think of things like lettuce and celery and eggplant. Oh, technically, you can put anything in the freezer, but it's not really going to come out super well on the other side. The texture is really going to change, and it's not going to be very palatable. So things like lettuce are just best eaten fresh. Some other foods that can become a little problematic when we freeze them are dairy products, like if you would try to freeze sour cream or salad dressing, they can separate. If you freeze cheese, the texture can change. Now, that might be okay if you're using it in a casserole. Maybe you've frozen some macaroni and cheese. But starchy foods like macaroni and rice and potatoes can become mealy, and not a safety concern, more of a quality concern. So those are the big ones that come to mind that aren't the best for freezing. But other than that, we're wide open. We can effectively freeze meat. So maybe you have some hunters in your family, or if you see a good sale at the grocery store, you can stock up. And if you package that meat appropriately, you can extend that shelf life for many, many months. Vegetables can be frozen. Again, if you have a garden or you had a good sale, or you just like preserving the peak of freshness vegetables. If you compare corn that you freeze yourself, some corn that you bought at your local farm stand, there's just something about it that's better than what you can buy already frozen at the grocery store. And fruits can be frozen as well. But if you've gone foraging for wild raspberries, or in the spring, pick your own strawberry season. I know I do that. I go and I pick and pick and pick, and then I come back home and think, oh my goodness, why did I get so many? But I was excited and I wanted to pick them. So lots of things that we can freeze.
That is actually, I think that's the best problem to have is when you're too excited when you're foraging. And you come home and you're like, oh my gosh, I literally have an abundance. And that makes me think of last week on Farming Country, we were chatting with one of the farmers in our area, and she was saying how winter is kind of the season of abundance where you can kind of be a little bit abundant with what you're kind of storing. And she also mentioned freezing meats, for example, and how now is kind of one of the prime times to stock up on meats because animals are eating that summer grass-fed grass. Going to the farmers market, stocking up on those meats is really a great time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's so helpful. I think also just hearing the ways that you can incorporate what you have been maybe harvested in your garden, letting that last for a couple more extra months is really helpful. That also makes me think just about timeline. How many months exactly is optimal for something that you might freeze?
Great question. So one thing I want to point out is when we freeze things, when we talk about how long you should keep it in there, it's not a matter of safety. It's just that quality is going to start to degrade over time. So most meat and poultry, we've got about 9 to 12 months. Same thing for vegetables, which is perfect because it gets you through to the next season of when they're going to be at peak freshness. And there's some things that we can do to help preserve our quality. So, for example, for vegetables, we get a better quality if we first blanch them. And that's shocking them in water just for a couple minutes. And we have some handy charts that tell you how long for which vegetable. And what that does is deactivates enzymes. And enzymes are like little chemical scissors that cause food to break apart. A great example of this is when you slice into an apple and the apple starts to turn brown. Those are enzymes eating away the flesh of the apple to expose the seed so that the apple can create another apple tree. So, great news if you're a piece of produce trying to reproduce. Bad news if you're a human trying to extend that and try to preserve that. So enzymes, when freezing, if they're not controlled, can cause our food to soften. It can cause changes in texture and flavor, and eventually cause nutrients to degrade faster. So some people think, oh, can I just skip that step? Yeah, you can. For me, I'm thinking, man, I'm going to this whole process and I'm taking a whole afternoon to freeze a bunch of corn. I want it to last as long as possible with the peak of freshness flavor.
I mean, that makes me think about how not only is freezing a little bit of an art, but there's clearly a science behind it with what you're
There
describing.
is. There is. And at Penn State Extension, we always share the latest research-based information. We've learned a lot about home food preservation in the last couple decades. And sometimes it's good to brush up on what are the recommendations from today versus relying on generational knowledge that got passed down because recommendations could have changed over the years.
And, you know, I'm just thinking about the science behind the freezing. I think something that I often hear is about freezer burn.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that and any tips you might have?
So when we're freezing food, one of the challenges is moisture and water vapor migration. This can help to transfer flavors, but also with this water migration can really change our texture. So if we have some food that is freezer burned, you can usually see it. So it looks like a lot of ice crystals on the surface, and the product can be discolored. If it's meat, it changes color. Sometimes it kind of washes out and there's a whitening on the surface. That's an interaction between oxygen and ice crystals that have the moisture has migrated to the surface, and we've got these big ice crystals forming. So the way that we prevent freezer burn is by properly packaging our food. So we want to be using freezer containers and freezer storage bags, not bags that are designed for just short-term storage. If you've ever picked up a freezer zip-top bag and compared that to just a regular storage bag, you can feel it's a lot thicker and it has that moisture and vapor barrier. There's also containers that we can use specifically for freezing that have a thick wall. They remain sturdy when frozen. Some packaging materials that people use for freezing, like they'll use old Cool Whip containers or old cottage cheese containers. Yeah, food came in them, but it wasn't designed for long-term storage. And sometimes plastic can get brittle when we put it into the freezer. It wasn't designed for that. And then those containers can break and we can get little pieces of plastic in our food, which, you know, if you chomp down on that can hurt your mouth.
Not so fun.
No. But then also it lets air in and moisture out. So choosing good quality packaging materials specifically designed for long-term freezing is one of the best things that we can do to protect quality from freezer burn.
I mean, even just in our several minutes together, I was writing down some tips that I'm really excited to incorporate into my home cooking journey. As I mentioned, as I enter my soup season, and if folks are interested in registering for the course, you can find more information on Penn State Extension's website at extension.psu.edu. Andy, I'm wondering if there's anything else you might want to add about what you have going on at Penn State Extension.
Yeah, so two things I'll say. Yes, you can absolutely find information on extension.psu.edu. You can also just go to Google and search Penn State Extension Food Preservation and go directly to our food preservation website. One of the things that you'll see as a banner across the top, it will say, stay connected with the home food preservation team. We put out a newsletter during preservation season from May to October-ish, and we'll share tips and tricks of whatever food is in season, share some recipes, if there's any new updates and research, if we're doing classes, things like that. It's free, so you can sign up to receive that from our website. One more thing. It's a little bit off topic, yet still related and timely for this time of year. If any of your listeners can tomatoes or tomato products like salsa, tomato sauce, it is very important, keeping in mind this time of year, that if frost kills the tomato plants, the tomatoes are still safe to eat fresh, but they are no longer safe to can. The reason for that is when the first frost comes, it triggers natural sugar production in the tomato plant. And that's a defense mechanism for the tomato plant so it can try to live a little bit longer. But when this happens, the natural level of acid in the tomatoes plummets, and we don't have that acid present anymore. And when we're canning, acid is a very important control factor against the bacteria Clostridium botulinum, which causes botulism toxin. So we need that acid to be in there. And actually, when we can tomatoes, we have to add a little bit of extra acid anyway, but that's a whole nother topic for another time. Be happy to chat about that next summer. But the takeaway from this is once frost kills your tomato plants, no more canning of those tomatoes, but you can eat them fresh.
Oh, that's so fascinating. Oh my goodness. That's very helpful to know. And I think these types of tips are exactly what this home food preservation freezing course offers. As Andy mentioned, you can find that information on the Extension's website or just by Googling the home food preservation freezing course. Andy, thank you so, so much. Like I said, I'm excited to incorporate some of these into my own cooking journey. I'm sure we'll connect again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Up next, you know what time it is? This Saturday's Star Talk Report with Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The full moon that will occur on Wednesday is a supermoon. The full moon coincides with the moon's closest approach to Earth in its lunar cycle. When this occurs, it is given the name supermoon. The term supermoon is not an astronomical term. It was coined by an astrologer in 1979 and has stuck around since. The moon orbits Earth about once every 28 days. This means that about once a month, the moon reaches its closest point to Earth. The term to describe the closest full moon of the year is the perigee moon. A perigee moon will occur every 13 months and 18 days, which is 14 lunar cycles. The moon's orbit around Earth is not a perfect circle. It is shaped like an ellipse. The moon's distance from Earth varies by 31,000 miles as it traces its orbit through space. The supermoon of November will also occur on the date of the moon's closest approach to Earth for the year. November's supermoon will be a perigee moon. The moon will be 222,000 miles away on Wednesday. When viewing the supermoon, it may not appear bigger and brighter than usual. Even though the moon is closer to Earth during a supermoon, the difference in size is difficult to see with the naked eye. The supermoon will be 16% brighter and 6.5% larger than normal. If you are afforded clear skies Wednesday night, venture out to gaze at the spectacle that is the supermoon. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thank you so much to Keith for this week's report. Well, before we sign off, just a few local events on our community calendar. Today, you can join the Radio Catskill team at Apple Pie Paloozaween. Happening later this afternoon, you can join the station for a fundraiser at Catskill Brewery in Livingston Manor. It is really the perfect time to eat pie, enjoy pie, be a pie taster yourself, from timeless classics to wickedly creative creations. Local bakers will battle for the crown of best apple pie in town. Apple Pie Paloozaween is going to be today, as I said, from 2 to 5 p.m. And yes, costumes are encouraged. On later this week, on Thursday, November 6th, the Upper Delaware Council will host a presentation called Wood, Coal, and Water, Three Essentials That Change the River Valley. The event is kicking off at 6 p.m. in Narrowsburg on the 6th. You can find more information on all these events and more events happening in your community at wjffradio.org. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Up next, it's Catskill Character. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and PR. I'll catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors, celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail. Morgan-outdoors.com.
Oh, trick-or-treaters.
Get the candy.